Okay, here I'm joining from a little far away place in Sri Lanka. We are in Polonnaruwa district. It's interesting and trying to connect with the mindfulness for young adults. So actually last week also I couldn't conduct the session, but today I'm trying to conduct it. And we were discussing a certain sutta that is nothing but the Mangala Sutta. Let me share the screen. So as you know, Mangala Sutta is one of the interesting and very popular sutta where Buddha discuss about the blessings. So what are the blessings? So this is a kind of a question arisen among the humans as well as in the celestial beings. So what is a real blessing? So at that time, certain people actually thought what they have seen is a blessing, and certain others thought what they have heard is a blessing. So likewise, different opinions were there. And ultimately, they decided to come to the Buddha, and they are asking the question from the Buddha. So now Buddha is giving a series of blessings or a series of occasions where it would become a real blessing. So they are actually the Buddha's answer here is very much a very practical answer. So that among those blissful states that or otherwise we can say the blessings, so most of them are very practical. They are human beings have to work hard and come across a proper path, and in that path they have to properly practice, so that becomes a sort of a blessing. So that is what we are discussing here, and already we have discussed several verses, and let me start with today with another verse. ආරති විරති පාපා මජ්ජපානාච සංයමෝ අපමාදෝච ධම්මේසු ඒතම් මංගල මුත්තම. And so this is a very common thing and known to us, ආරති විරති පාපා. So very much like abstaining from all the evils. So that is the basic teaching of the Buddha, sabba papa sakaranam. So same thing, ආරති විරති පාපා. So you become fairly away from all the evil deeds, all the unwholesome deeds. And මජ්ජපානාච සංයමෝ, refraining from all the intoxicants. So basically, so these are, you can see that certain facts are there fairly related with the practice, and certain other facts are there which are related with the morality. And these things are fairly related to the morality, where the majjapana cha sanyamo suramere majjapama dattana veramani sikkhapadan samadhyam. So this is the fifth precept that we all know. So that Buddha mentioned as a blessing. So you can understand its practical implication. So if one is a drunken, so then it becomes a huge disaster to the whole family, to the whole village, or even to the whole society. But on the other hand, if one is a sober person and he is avoiding all different kinds of intoxicants, so that means he's a dependable person, he's a trustworthy person, and he's a heedful person. But on the other hand, if one is not a heedful person, he is negligent about his own practice, he is neglectful about his own conduct and the morality, so then he can become even addicted to certain intoxicants. And today they have become a huge problem, and various different kinds of intoxicants are available today. And even more than Buddha's time, now these problems are quite difficult, and even difficult to solve even by the governments, because they are not easily traceable even. And people use various techniques to sort of hide those things and somehow use these intoxicants, either using the drugs or either using some form of kind of liquid form or either way. So somehow they use certain intoxicants so that they become completely insane. And but on the other hand, Buddha highlights, so if one is capable of avoiding that, so if one is maintaining a sober quality without using any of these intoxicants, so there Buddha mentioned it's a blessing. Apamado cha dhammesu. So heedfulness in good qualities. So there are various good qualities that one needs to acquire, one needs to develop. And so if one is heedful in developing all these good qualities, so that becomes a real blessing. So we know that as a say, for example, as a young child, so he has to develop certain qualities like, say, understanding, certain amount of wisdom, certain amount of concentration. Even his young age, if he can develop, so it becomes a blessing. And as a young adult, if one can develop those qualities, so it also can become a certain, say, blessing. In certain other previous occasions, Buddha mentioned that if one is now professionally a well-to-do person, if he know a certain kind of a profession, a craftsmanship, so that is also a blessing. So likewise here, particularly highlight certain spiritual qualities, where one is heedful about developing certain spiritual qualities, either in the young age or either in the young adult age. So if one is heedful about developing them, so it becomes a kind of a blessing that even when one is sort of affected by various ups and downs of one's life, still these spiritual qualities become one's kind of savior or kind of refuge, because they are inbuilt to one's person. Now, say for example, the other, whatever the material acquirements, materially what we have obtained, so they are very temporary and they are fairly subjected to various situations. Either through the fire they can be destroyed, either through the floods something can be destroyed, either someone can steal everything, either government can take them back. So likewise various situations are there. But if one is developing certain spiritual qualities, then it becomes a certain blessing. So then even though such kinds of ups and downs, vicissitudes of the life happen, one somehow can manage the whole situation. So it becomes one's strength. So likewise, apamado cha dhammesu. So without heed, being heedless, one is now heedful about developing these things. Nowadays, what happens is people have various other priorities. So they think, okay, I can do this once I become quite old, or once I take retirement, or when my children have become adult. So likewise, they have various reasons to postpone their spiritual journey. But on the other hand, if one is taking care of that, if one is giving some prominence to that, then that means one is heedful. Not one is heedless, rather one becomes heedful, that without neglecting the opportunity. Because we don't know when we would get another opportunity to develop these kinds of qualities. So if one is heedful about developing these things, so it becomes a blessing to oneself and it becomes a blessing to others as well. Now, there are three blessings here Buddha described. And then we can go to the next one. Garavocha nivatocha santutticha katanyuta kalena dhamma savanam etam mangala muttama. Garavocha nivatocha. So, having some kind of a reverence to the others. Now here, there are various people who are sort of deserving certain amount of reverence. It may be, there may be ones who are quite elderly people. They are our elders, or they are our teachers, they are our parents. So in order to sort of respect them, we have to have a certain amount of humility. So that is actually the nivatocha. So we can see that nivata, the quality of nivata, that means the quality of the humility, is something Buddha recommended, so that one becomes sort of down to earth, fairly a kind of a humble person. It doesn't mean that one is completely kind of a timid person, but rather what is highlighting here is one is not conceited. One is not sort of proud. One is easily sort of approachable. And on such a person, it is quite easily one can develop this garavocha. One can develop kind of reverential attitude towards a good person. Suppose towards a Buddha, to the monks or whoever, the quality people, some wholesome people or sub-purisas. So likewise, so when one recognizes that certain person deserves certain kind of a respect, so one's mind is capable of doing that. Sometimes what happens is because of the conceit, even though the other person is quite capable, other person is quite reverential, still our mind does not capable of giving that reverence, giving that sort of deserving attitude because of our own conceit. But on the other hand, if we have a certain amount of humility, that if we have a certain amount of understanding, then we can overcome conceit and we can actually bow down. So that is not an easy quality because of various reasons we can become conceited and we can become proud. But on the other hand, if we are able to recognize our conceit and overcome that conceit, and instead if we can develop certain humility within ourselves, so then it becomes kind of a strength so that we can even pay respect to another person. We can bow down in front of a good person. So that is spiritually recognized as a good quality. And santutti cha katanyuta, santutti, contentment. Actually, the contentment is another very interesting quality because nowadays these things are very rarely discussed. Nowadays, what people are continuing is simply with the pressure principle. As much as possible, earning enough money and satisfying one's senses, gratifying one's senses. So this is the simple pressure principle that the people are following, especially the West and even now in the East. People are simply obsessed with this kind of a crazy kind of attitude where one is very much like infatuated with satisfying one's senses, gratifying one's senses, forgetting about any kind of a spiritual attainment, forgetting about any kind of a spiritual achievement. And santutti is one of these spiritual attainment. And not only that, this is even related to the material possessions as well. I assume that you have something, you have a particular job, you have a certain occupation, you have some wealth, you have a car, whatever it is. And when are we feeling enough? When do we think that this is enough for me? Now it is the time to dedicate some time for my family, to look after my children, look after my husband, look after my wife, or look after my own spiritual growth. No point of continuously going after money or wealth. What I have, what I have earned is fairly enough. And this sort of an attitude is very rare. So people often actually go after many, many achievements, one after the other, never stopping, never looking back, and never being satisfied, and always have kind of an unsatisfaction, always have some sort of a frustration. And that's why Buddha mentioned, uno loko, atitto, tanha dasu. So always this world appear like kind of not fulfilled. Never feel fulfilled. Always feel unsatisfied. Something is lacking. But on the other hand, if one feel that now I am very much like fulfilled, but I have material is enough. I can maintain my family. I can maintain my career. I can maintain my life. So I have some wealth. So if I have such kind of a contentment, so that gives us a lot of release in our mind. Otherwise, what happens is we are continuously going after. We are continuously frustrated. Continuously have some kind of a stress because we never feel satisfied. We never feel that we are fulfilled. Actually, it doesn't mean that we become sort of a passive or kind of a defeated kind of a person. Rather, we have certain other objectives. So we have certain other priorities. Rather than merely using our life for whole purpose of satisfying senses, so satisfying gratifying senses or achieving certain materialistic achievements. So you have some kind of another approach, another alternative goal, which is even worthy of trying. So that's why here we can see. So santutti comes in different forms. So when you have enough wealth materially, so you can become satisfied. That is one thing. And even while meditating, if we have some kind of always kind of a greedy approach or always feeling that I don't have anything, I have a lot of expectations, I want to become this, I want to become that. So that's kind of a sort of expectation-based attitude. If we have such, then it is quite difficult even to meditate. So while meditating, we have to have a very relaxed, very calm, satisfied kind of a mood. So then only we can say, okay, my meditation is growing carefully, growing happily, because we are in a kind of a relaxed mood. We are not in a frustrated mood, unsatisfied mood, but rather one is in a very relaxed, satisfied mood. This is quite important. So this contentment is something that Buddha fairly highlighted. Even Buddha mentioned that is the greatest wealth. Santutti paramang dana. So satisfaction or this contentment is the greatest wealth. Not that you have many cars and many lands and many houses and all these things. Rather the contentment. Contentment is the best or the supreme kind of wealth according to the Buddha. You can see that mentally how kind of a release that it gives us. So when we are often going after many this and that, always driven by craving, so never being satisfied, never feel satisfied, never feel any kind of a happiness, because always going after something. Many, many ambitions are there, many, many future expectations are there, and we can't say that we can fulfill all of them. So every time there will be a unsatisfied, unfulfilled desire. But on the other hand, if we maintain kind of a mentality where we can be satisfied, okay, I have enough. I'm now satisfied. I'm contented. So that gives us a lot of mental release. Instead of stress, now you feel satisfied. You release your stress. So that's why even in the meditation, so that's why we ask yogis, okay, don't keep any expectations when you are meditating. So that expectation can become a hindrance. But if you simply continue your practice as a habit, as a kind of a gratitude towards the Buddha, it's a kind of an exploration towards the Dhamma. So then it is not kind of a sort of a huge expectation. Rather, it's a kind of a duty that you are doing. It becomes a habit of your life. So then you can be quite satisfied. You even can be happy with little things. Even if you have a certain amount of little resources, still you can maintain certain satisfaction. Not that you have to be a billionaire to be satisfied. Rather, even with little things, you can be satisfied. Even with a little breeze, you can be satisfied. Even with the birds chirping, you can be satisfied. Even when you see the sky, you can be satisfied. So likewise, these little things can make you happy. So when you are attuned to that, so that's the meaning. So how we can have that kind of a contented attitude? So if one has that, then Buddha mentioned, okay, it is a real blessing. Santutti. And the last one, katanyuta. So this is a very, very rare quality nowadays. So people are completely selfish. They easily forget someone else's help even. So they don't have any kind of a gratitude. So people are very rarely grateful nowadays. So they easily forget what others have contributed, what others have, how others have helped. So instead they become fairly selfish. They ignore others or they neglect others or they even sort of belittle someone else's help. But on the other hand, what Buddha expect is the gratitude. So towards our parents, some sort of a gratitude. Towards our, say, elders, some kind of a gratitude. Towards our, teachers, some amount of gratitude. To our friends, maybe a gratitude. So whoever helping us, whoever taking care of us, so then, so kind of a heartfelt gratitude. So if one has that heartfelt gratitude, so it is actually a part of mindfulness. Actually, when you are developing mindfulness, so you become fairly self-aware. about your own body and about your own emotions. And you probably may understand if you do something to someone else, and if that particular person, the receiver, give a little bit of a thank, little bit of an appreciation, it boosts you. It is not that he is boosting your ego, but rather a kind of a genuine appreciation if he has done, then it's a kind of an innocent happiness that you can enjoy. Not that you are trying to boost yourself as an ego, rather a very innocent kind of a happiness when someone is being grateful. So that's why when we pay respect to the Buddha, we pay respect to the teachers, so actually then probably in one sense we can say that we are developing certain amount of humility and we are overcoming the conceit. And on the other hand, we are developing the gratitude. So, and Buddha mentioned, so this gratitude is something very rare. And certain suttas are there, which is mentioned. And nowadays, this gratitude is a very rare quality. People often have, not often have this sort of a quality. And Buddha mentioned, to recognize the sappurisa, this is a very, very important quality. In order to distinguish an asappurisa and a sappurisa, Buddha mentioned a sappurisa is endowed with this gratitude. Even a little help that someone is done upon him, so he can easily remember that. Like something written in a stone, he can remember even a small help, even a little help, a little contribution someone has offered him, so he can easily remember that. It has might have done long time ago, but still he can remember that. So that is the kind of a mentality that Buddha highlights. And the Buddha mentioned, so you can use, now whenever you want to recognize a sappurisa, a good person, so if he has this gratefulness, if he's showing this gratitude, so then he should be a good person. So you can see how Buddha is taking us to a different dimension, rather than nowadays what we are using as different scales and different money-related, finance-related certain scales. Here, Buddha is taking certain other standards. Say, for example, the first one, Buddha say, Garavocha Nivatocha, where one has the quality of making reverence, bowing down in front of a good person. And basically the humility. And on the other hand, having certain amount of contentment. And again, having the gratitude. And then the last one here mentioned in this particular verse, Kalena Dhamma Savana. So, having a good Dhamma sermon, listening to certain good Dhamma sermon, so that one become actually connected with the Dhamma. So you know that even for a Sotapanna, Buddha mentioned, if you are, even a Sotapanna, if he's listening to certain Dhamma, and if he's really, and he is actually particularly capable of connecting it with his own practice. Say, for example, you are hearing a Dhamma sermon, and it explains certain very interesting qualities, or certain interesting Dhamma, and you, as a Sotapanna, for example, Buddha say, a Sotapanna actually connects that. He listens eagerly about it. Carefully he listens. And he connects with that Dhamma. And not only that, this Dhamma Savana is actually helping us to develop certain amount of Sutame Jnana. That means the learnedness. That is also important because it is not that we are going in this kind of a journey. Rather, again and again, we have to refer the Buddha's teachings, so that we get a proper alignment. Kalena Dhamma Savana. So at the proper occasion, that timely listening to Dhamma sermons actually helpful. Because sometimes we feel confused, sometimes we feel perplexed, sometimes we have various doubts. On such occasion, actually listening to Dhamma sermon may really help. And on the other hand, it may even uplift our morale. Even it may encourage our practice. So likewise, practicing for the practitioners, so these qualities are very important, and these are actually a blessing if one is having. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Devan sir, may I answer on this?
Yeah.
We have six questions today.
Right.
Question number one of six. This is about drinking tea. The tea was warm and sweet with a hint of a milky taste with it. The tea was a bit warm at the time. I held onto the cup with my right hand and handled from the left. I held onto the cup with my right hand and the handle from the left. I brought it up to my mouth. Steam from the tea slowly fogged my glasses and therefore my vision. The aroma of the tea was sugary, like it had malt in it. The tea was warm against my upper lip and teeth. The tip of the hard palate, which acted like gum behind the two front teeth of mine, began to feel a bit numb due to the heat of the drink. Breaths taken in and out caused the fog in my glasses to come and go. Occasionally, the fog would cover my entire glass. Sometimes it would not. When I took the first sip, I felt my tongue moving in a rhythmic pattern. First, it would fill a gap created by the central area of my tongue against the hard palate of my mouth, while up until the tip of the tongue created a small chamber for the tea to residue. Next, it would fill up the gap as I took a sip from my cup. Once it's filled with the warm sugary fluid, the tip of my tongue would find its way to the hard palate, creating a transverse wave, sending the tea along my mouth and on its way to my stomach. When I swallow it, I can feel warm substance traveling down my throat and to my stomach where I can't feel anything. The tea had left a warm tingle in my mouth. I could feel the tea had numbed my front teeth and gum. While I felt a slightly starchy and sugary taste remain in the middle of my tongue. The next few sips of tea were slightly faster through the rhythmic pattern of the transverse wave. Still remained. Once I had made my way to the last few sips of tea, I slowed down a bit, noticing the bits and pieces of the tea that had sedimented at the bottom of my cup. I was careful not to drink it, as it was not very pleasant texture, in contrast to the tea. Once I had finished, I felt a warm sensation against my lips and the tip of my tongue, and a sweet taste against my tongue, which was left behind by the tea. This is a report on how I drank my tea this morning. I'd like to know how I could improve this. Much merit, with metta. It's the end of the question.
I think it's a quite good report that you have recognized even very subtle differences and very subtle qualities. And that is how actually again and again when we are developing mindfulness, even these subtle aspects of our experience we can reveal. So typically what happens is while drinking, so we are thinking. We can't fully involve with the drinking. Rather, our mind is completely distracted and we are thinking various this and that while the drinking is happening. But now mindful drinking means that you are fully aware of what is going on. Actually, the amount of detail that you can recognize is immense. So it depends on how careful you are. So depending on that clarity, depending on that resolution, you can know many, many information. So what you have revealed is also quite good. And you can continue. And not only even drinking and various other activities like having a bath or having your meals, etc. There are many, many opportunities which are available for us to develop mindfulness. And even Buddha mentioned that there is no any particular task that we can ignore, thinking that we can't develop mindfulness. Every task we can use to develop mindfulness, and your effort is quite good, and you can continue.
Question number two of six, which is another question again. Dear Bhante, last time you asked a question about the choice of having family life and children or deciding a solitary life. Most of our situations are different as we do not have such a choice and found spiritual practice after having family life and children. What is the best course of action for someone like that who found Dhamma in the later part of their life? I may have repeated this question and the second time sending this across. Due to internet problems. So now we got only one, so that's fine. So much merits for this service with metta. That's the end of the question.
So I think, even at our, say, after having married and say you have children, but still you have some inclination towards the Dhamma path, so that's a good sign. And if you have that opportunity, that's a blessing. Even at your, say, as a parent now. But now you need to find time. And you may have a lot of other dedications, you may have a lot of other obligations. And among all these obligations, how to find time may be a challenge. But if you have the sort of a desire to continue the path, if you have the desire to have certain amount of spiritual development, definitely you may have the opportunity to find times as well. So find your time as much as possible. And if your children and your spouse is actually giving you enough support, that is also a blessing. Because sometimes, because of many family commitments, sometimes you can't practice. Because of your children, their commitments, you can't practice. So likewise, many difficulties are possible. But if you don't have such things, if your children are supportive, and if your wife, husband is supportive, then it's a real blessing. And you can continue the path as much as possible. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 8 is the Dhammasamma question. Dear Venerable Sir, what is the best meaning of avijja for a practitioner who follows the mindfulness-based Dhamma path? It is something such as self-view associated with everything we do, or something which might not be linked to the practice, or some unknown Dhamma. With metta, that's the end of the question.
No, actually, avijja at different forms in Dhamma, it is explained. And say, for example, the best explanation is with respect to the Four Noble Truths. If you don't know about the Four Noble Truths, you have never heard about it. And again, you have never practiced according to the Four Noble Truths. So then it's a kind of an ignorance. So that is the main ignorance Buddha mentioned. So not knowing the Four Noble Truths. Actually, knowing the names of the Four Noble Truths is not exactly mentioned here, that even a Sunday school child may know that. But mostly what is necessary is that properly knowing the noble truth of suffering, properly knowing the noble truth of the cause of suffering, properly knowing the noble truth of the cessation of suffering, and properly practicing knowing the Noble Eightfold Path. So likewise, ignorance here is not knowing that. And you are not doing according to that, or you are not practicing according to that. So that becomes the major ignorance. So on the other hand, when one starts practicing slowly, slowly, this ignorance will be reduced, because you are now slowly practicing the suffering or the dukkha satcha you are trying to understand. So that is what we try to do at the first half of the, say, Satipatthana, that you are exploring the five clinging aggregates, panchupadana khanda, you are trying to understand. So that understanding actually leads to sort of overcome the desires, the tanha, the craving, slowly diminish as a result of the practice. So in that sense, we can say your practice is helping even to abandon the second noble truth. That is samudaya satchang pahatabba. So the second noble truth has to be abandoned. So that is where the practice actually helps us to even abandon the second noble truth. And the third noble truth has to be realized. So as much as possible when you are developing, so you time to time probably come across certain release state of suffering or release state of mind where there is no suffering at all. So mind is quite relaxed. Mind is free from any grasping. So such kind of a thing. So the continuation of this whole practice is the Noble Eightfold Path. So likewise, proper understanding of the practice, so developing mindfulness and developing sila, samadhi, prajna. So that is the most important thing. That means we are overcoming avijja. So instead we are now having the vijja or the knowledge, understanding. So therefore, there are the most important part of avijja is the not knowing of Four Noble Truths.
Today's guided sitting practice. When I scan the body with the help of the guidance, I can focus on various parts of the body and know the sensations really well. When I come back to breath afterwards, it seems very subtle or almost disappeared. If I do the sitting practice without a body scan and guidance, I can observe the gross breath better. I can find the differences between the in-breath and out-breath, also between consecutive breaths, and also observe how these sensations fade away. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes of continuous attention and mindfulness on the sensations around breathing for the breath to disappear completely. Afterwards, I feel more calm and serene, spacious silence, than the body scan method, where I could not feel the evolution of the breath that much. My question is, now I have these two techniques to enter the subtle breathing stage, which results somewhat different outcome. To move forward with the practice, which one should I use again and again? With metta, that's the end of the question.
I am sorry, Shamila, I couldn't properly read the sort of those two methods that he has used. Can you repeat the two methods?
In the body, with the help of the guidance, I can focus on various parts of the body and know the sensations really well. When mm-hmm. I come back to breath afterwards, it seems very subtle or almost disappeared. If I do the sitting practice without a body scan and guidance, I can observe the gross breath better. I can find differences between the in-breath and out-breath, also between consecutive breaths, and also observe how these sensations fade away. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes of continuous attention and mindfulness on the sensations around breathing for the breath to disappear completely. Afterwards, I feel more calm and serene, spacious silence than the body scan method, where I could not feel the evolution of the breath that much.
I got the point. So basically, through careful observation of breathing, you can come to a situation where breathing becomes fairly subtle, almost like disappeared. On the other hand, you can continue actually observing various other sensations, and while you continue that, again the breathing becomes subtle. So these are the two phenomena that you are sort of practicing. So I feel the different advantages are there in both opportunities, in both approaches. Say, in the breathing exercise, say for example, you are continuing with Anapanasati without shifting yourself to something else. So there are the opportunities that you are continuously maintaining very, very consistent approach without shifting to anything else. So it is easily that your breathing becomes subtle. That's obvious. But on the other hand, when you shift your attention to various sensations available throughout the body, so you are doing certain amount of investigation here and there. And later when you switch back to breathing, it becomes subtle. But the important thing is why we are doing it. So this whole sequence or this whole exercise is to develop certain amount of wisdom primarily. And I feel in the second approach that when you are observing various subtle sensations, so that an opportunity is there for you more than you are continuously watching the breathing. Because, I mean, if you are expecting your breathing to calm down, you simply therefore has a very relaxed mindset. So that is one advantage, of course. But on the other hand, what is the amount of wisdom that you have gathered through that exercise? But on the other hand, assume that you are observing various sensations, that you are carefully investigating their behavior. That gives us a lot of opportunity to develop wisdom. The breathing actually has become kind of a technique for you to start this investigation process. So to sharpen your tools so that you can continue this investigation process. So this investigation is where you are sort of developing a fair amount of wisdom. So I therefore prefer to tell you, even though your breathing does not become subtler, still continue this observing various sensations. So if you can carefully recognize various characteristics of the sensations, how they are arising, how they are changing, how they are passing away, all that different characteristics of various sensations, that gives you a lot of understanding. And a lot of internal, sort of we can say, at the very subconscious level, thorough understanding is there as a result of this thorough investigation. So I therefore like to tell you, so do this investigation of many sensations, and you don't need to even switch to Anapanasati if this investigation is continuing properly, thoroughly, because this helps you to develop even enlightenment factors for jhanas. So this is the path actually we need to continue. Yeah.
But just wondering if there's a difference whether you can hear me properly. Now, earlier.
I can hear you, but there's a little bit of echoing happens, but anyway, I can manage.
Okay. Question number 5 of 9.
Five of nine. Okay, continue.
Dear Bhante, can we assume internet-based content as intoxicants, which destroy good qualities of mind, creating craving and addiction? Therefore, can we refrain from them, considering under breach of the five precepts? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, there's a significant impact on that as well. Even a few days back, I heard that one university student of Jaffna University, I heard that he commits suicide because of a kind of a, video game, kind of cyber game or something that they are playing through the internet. So that is the problem. Actually now, whatever the technical advantage, whatever the technical opportunity, people can actually misuse. Now assume that now, right now, we are using Zoom to discuss about the Dhamma. And someone else can use Zoom also to discuss something bad or to even to say propagate something very bad. So it is not really the technology that is harmful, rather how people are using it. But only other thing is that the people are using like YouTube and all these things in a way, kind of an addictive way. That if you are sort of using a particular kind of videos, so many of such videos are being again pumped again and again, so that you are being very much attached to that. You are being retained in that kind of situation. So you can become fairly addicted. You may be wasting a lot of time in watching YouTube and etc. So I can say, to some extent, I can agree with you, but I can't say that even though we discuss this, we can't say that we can completely overcome that or we can completely stop that. Only thing is we have to be fairly mature to use it properly, to maintain certain amount of standard, certain amount of self-restraint when we are using it. We may not be able to completely abolish these things now, so it has become part of the whole society now. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 9, and this is a general question. Dear Bhante, is there a reason why someone would feel anxious or emotional while listening to chanting? On one occasion, I recently felt overwhelmed while listening to monks chanting, while listening in person. I started to cry. It took some time to calm down. I usually do not feel like this. Interested to know what Bhante thinks about this. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, it can happen actually if you are connected with the Dhamma particularly, and if you can understand the meaning what monks are chanting. Say, for example, you are chanting Karaniya Metta Sutta, and if you know exactly what each and every phrase, each and every word is meant, it has a very, very deep qualities that Buddha is highlighting, and even the Mangala Sutta, as we discussed. So there is a significant meaning to what Buddha has taught. So if we, with that kind of a mindset, with that kind of gratitude, if we are listening, then definitely tears can even come, because we are connecting with the Buddha, we are connecting with the teaching. So this is a possibility. So I can't say it is a possibility. That particularly it is not that you are sort of being charmed by the sort of the tone. Rather, if you are really connected with the meaning, if you can properly understand what Buddha has meant there, so actually it will connect you with the Dhamma.
Question number 7 of 9. This is a Dhamma Sermon question. Dear Bhante, based on your Dhamma talk today, I feel like we can be aware of the precepts and have a deep awareness of protecting them during various day-to-day activities. Can this be a part of mindfulness practice itself? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Because, maintaining precepts is possible when you are mindful. Because otherwise we are sort of emotional, or we become sort of, impulsive. Because we can't maintain, we don't have enough mindfulness. So since we are quite impulsive, we are reactive, and immediately we jump to conclusions, we immediately get into reactions, we immediately break precepts. But when we develop mindfulness, so that sort of immediate reactions become less and less, impulsive reactions become less and less, so we can have certain amount of self-management. So that is one result of mindfulness practice. So that means, so if you are developing mindfulness, we can easily maintain the precepts. Definitely it is true.
All the questions we have regarding the practice and the sermon. So it's actually right. Regarding the next two questions are actually regarding where Bhante is. And so it says, what is the location in Polonnaruwa where Bhante is connecting to? Is it a monastery to Nisanavane? And can
actually
come to these locations and meditate with Sangha if we have developed mindfulness, foundations of mindfulness?
No, actually, I didn't get to the last statement.
Is it a monastery related to Nisvanavanya? And can anyone come to these locations and meditate with Sangha if we have developed foundations of mindfulness practice? And
right.
Question is, where can we find retreats from the Ganga and can we join?
Right. So basically, here is a one monastery called Arya Dhamma Monastery, located in the Aralagangvila, or it is in between Aralagangvila and the Dehiyattakandiya in Polonnaruwa district. It is called Kajuattaranya, Kajuatta Monastery, and it's with around 20 monks, and it belongs to, you know, the Yogasrama Sanstha, Nissanvanaya, Naoyana, and all these monasteries are belong to one group of monasteries called Sri Kalyani Yogasrama Sanstha. About 200 monasteries all around Sri Lanka are belongs to. So this monastery is not directly belong to Nissanvanaya, but this belongs to the whole system or whole group of monasteries that we all are belong to. And so we can easily come here, and actually certain monks who were in Nissanvanaya now are practicing here at this monastery. So they invited me to come and conduct a retreat, 7 days retreat. Now today is the last day. So I came here on last Sunday, and now tomorrow only I am leaving back to Nissanvanaya. So it's also a very interesting place, and fair amount of space is available and enough facilities are available, and people are very friendly, and you know, the innocent people. And so I find it very good, and they are honestly practicing. So that is the most important thing. That's why I also feel energetic. I also feel sort of helping them. So they are practicing honestly. So, I mean, they are honestly practicing, and those two monks have done a great job. So I also came here as a kind of a support for them, so that they get a kind of a boost, and the people are practicing also get a kind of a boost, and the dedication they are showing is most important. They don't have, you know, like rooms and all the facilities like available in the Nisarnavanaya, but they were simply sleeping on the, you know, Dhamma hall, and somehow they are managing, and all 7 days many people are participating, and some are coming in the morning and leaving, but many others are using their basic facilities. They are simply using a mat and sleeping in the, you know, Dhamma hall, and they are continuously practicing. So that is the encouraging factor. So time to time I sometimes come to this place to encourage them. And on the other hand, I am conducting retreats at Kalalgoda, in the close to Kalavatugoda. That's an English medium retreat, once a month, 3 days retreat. And apart from that, myself or Bhante Dhammajiva conducting retreats at Chitta Vivekashrama in Colombo, that is in Bhatramulla. Other than that, in Nisarnavane. Okay, back to you.
We can post those names maybe on the chat window.
Kajuatta Monastery. Kajuatta Monastery in Aralagangvila. Oh, Dehiyattakandiya. So both they are referring. Dehiyattakandiya or Aralagangvila.
So
Can't hear you, Chamila. I didn't hear you. No, you are not muted, but I can't hear you. I don't know why. Maybe the internet problem.
I think
Can you hear me clearly? Can you hear me clearly? Ah, really? But I can't hear you properly today. I don't know why. But we can't, I can't hear at all now.
Can you hear me now?
Now, yes.
With using a microphone, I thought it was more click better. Yeah, but sometimes they say that they can't hear me. Can you hear me now?
Didn't get to, I can't hear you.
Better now?
Ah, yes, now better.
I think we will be ending the program now anyway. So those are all the questions we had for today.
Okay, fine.
Yes. So to end the program, we'd like to first thank Bhante for his valuable time, even with the busy schedule at the monastery. To all the supporters of this program, both seen and unseen, and to all the participants for joining today for practice and also sharing their questions. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Therwan Sanrai.
Yeah, Therwan Sanrai.